It's time for In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we could be sailing through the next couple of days without rain. That's fantastic news. We'll check that complete forecast coming up in just a little bit. It has been a roller coaster. Mother Nature's last little blast of cold weather is going to blow through this weekend. Hopefully it's the last one. And we'll get a chance to get out and about and get some things done. It's going to be a great weekend to get to your garden center. And we have some guests coming in. Good morning, Tony.
Well, good morning, Ernie. How are you?
Doing just dandy, thank you.
Dandy. That's good. You haven't said that in a long time.
No, but I'm feeling dandy again.
About time.
Yes.
Yeah, you were a little under the weather there for a bit.
Yeah, it was difficult. I had that same nasal thing that just went around. You know, everybody seemed to have it. It was sometimes it was a cold, sometimes it was a sinus infection. It was just, it made you feel blah.
I still think there's quite a bit of that going around, especially with the weather.
The blah.
Yeah, the fluctuations, you know, the temperatures. We go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
And boy, oh boy, where did we bottom out last night? Are we there yet? Are we at the bottom right now? 30? 31?
33 right now.
33?
It was expected to get down to 32, but I think we're all right. It might drop down just before sunrise, but...
Incredible.
Yeah.
You know, just going back a few weeks ago, what we were seeing, what we were experiencing in February... You know, the latter part of, and then when we got into March, you know, things were a little wishy-washy, and still right now, thus far in April, same thing. And I would venture to say we will probably see this again, maybe at least a time, and I hope not, maybe two, but I've seen it all too often.
Sure.
Yeah. If you remember last year.
And I do.
The middle of May, right there around Mother's Day, we did have a frost.
Yes.
Which leads me to go into this little topic. Do not be enticed. I want to say this again. Do not be enticed to buy annuals. You're going to see annuals at your local garden centers and nurseries, and you're going to see them really rocking and rolling in the chain stores, but they don't care. They don't care if you pick those up right now. They don't care what the forecast looks like. You know what I'm saying? It's all about the mighty buck.
On consignment.
They're on consignment, yes. And without me going any deeper, it's just not the time to put annuals out right at the moment. No. We'll talk more about that as well. But I'll tell you what, this yo-yoing effect of the temperatures is making us in the garden center world a little crazy because we're getting things in.
But you guys are all borderline to start with.
Yeah, we're borderline. We need intervention, yes, in a good way.
Sure.
However, we've been playing the shell game. And when I talk about the shell game, I am talking about things that we're getting into the nursery stock. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, some of the beautiful, beautiful blooming weeping cherries. All the cherries, as a matter of fact, even some of the fruit trees. You know, we're bringing those inside. We're putting them in the greenhouses. And we're very fortunate that we have that ability to do so. Because that prolongs that bloom, that protects that tree to a degree. So we can sell you a beautiful tree so you can see what it looks like. And the old shell game, I play it every year. We bring things in, we take things out. So that's what's going on, in and out. Yeah, remember when your parents used to say that?
Yeah.
In and out.
Yeah.
In and out. That's how I felt, been feeling the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those weekends where you're tempted to go ahead and jump the gun, so to speak, but don't do that because temperatures, as Tony pointed out, are going to dip down again. But this is going to be a great weekend to get to your locally owned, independently operated home and garden center and start getting some things together. We're going to also talk about the Fertiloom three-step program. And something Tony pointed out, too, cold crops. We'll talk about those coming up in just a little bit. But right now we need to pause In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And as we were talking just a few minutes ago about the colder temperatures, just keep in mind that Mother Nature does have a way of protecting itself. And the things that are out there are going to be just fine. But don't jump the gun and put something out there that could be a little iffy.
Yeah, don't do anything heroic.
That was the word I was
say it all the time.
For.
But I was talking with Scott Maddox just yesterday, and you know, the conversation came up. You know, hey, are you moving things in and out? And he said, you know, he's telling me some things that you know he's doing so, but the other things. Well, he was just going to turn on a sprinkler system, his irrigation system this morning, so run it until like the sun starts getting up and so forth as it's up. It's usually when the cell structure freezes in the foliage or the buds. And it ruptures, you know, and that has to do with the sun warming some things up, too. So it all kind of goes hand in hand. And, you know, by watering, you used to always hear that those growers in Florida that had the orange groves and so forth, they would run the sprinkler systems, you know, and try and protect the plants themselves.
Yeah.
You know, that's one approach. And another, you know, just get a frost blanket. It's real lightweight. And drape it over some of your more tender kind of plants. One in particular is the lace leaf Japanese maple. A lot of times this time of year, as it's flushing out, starting to put on new growth, it's relatively vulnerable. And sometimes, you know, and the beauty of it is if you have a healthy Japanese maple, you may see a little bit of setback, but if it's healthy, it will respond and come back favorably. But there's some things that you can do, but a lot of times I've just found out, just leave it well enough alone. And like I was saying a moment ago, do not jump the gun trying to get tomato plants in and all that other stuff. I really mean that. Think about it. It's like you going to the swimming pool a month or two early and just diving into the water or jumping into the water. It's a shock. Mm-hmm. And when plants are put into that type of a situation and environment, it's not what they're accustomed to, because think about it, they're in the greenhouses. That soil, the temperature of the soil that particular plant is in is a lot warmer than what it is outside. And when you put a plant in that situation, it just sits there, and really, in the long run, I don't think it's very beneficial at all. So trying to get that first tomato, if you want it, go buy it somewhere at the grocery store. And I'm being really serious. I don't want to be...
I really am.
And I make it a point to try to inform everyone that comes into the garden center, be cautious, be aware of what the weather forecast is. And really, this is how I try to read it out or interpret it is when it comes to annuals, is I'm looking at the end of the month of April, and then I'll start looking at that 10-day forecast. And if it looks relatively favorable, then I'm going to go ahead and put some things in. Now, right now, we were talking about some of the coal crops, and when we talk about coal crops, we're talking about things like spinach. We're talking about things like kale, broccoli, cabbage, radishes. Those are things that you can put into the ground now without any worries. Those are things that are going to come on early. They do relatively well in cooler temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And again, those are the plants when we get into the hot part of the summer, they've pretty much... they're tired. They're starting to get old. You know, they're starting to bolt the seed. So those are the things that you can get into the ground now. Onion sets, onions, potatoes. So like you, if you know, that Irish potato famine that you endured. I mean, you're long-lived, Ernie.
Yes, I am.
A long in the tooth there. You know, you can plant potatoes. So there's a lot of things that we can do now to you know, push forward, get into the spring season. Sure. We're there officially. And so really look for those items. Perennials. Perennials are pretty resilient, and you're starting to find perennials now becoming more and more readily available. The creeping phlox, they're looking stellar, by the way. That's something that you can plant. Another perennial that we've talked often about here past weeks, the Helleborus, Lenten Rose. Those are still, they're in their heyday right now. They're in full bloom. They're looking great. They're awesome. So there's some things that you can still do and get into the ground. Pulmonaria, lungwort, that's still good. That's a great choice, you know, if you're looking to do some of those things. So we're just about there.
The creeping phlox is pretty hardy, and I overheard a friend of mine down at the garage yesterday go, I can't believe it. You know, the phlox are starting to bloom now, and they're looking great, and now we're going to get this breeze, and it'll kill all of them. I don't think that that's wholly true, is it?
No, not at all.
Survive.
Oh no, they're in full bloom. They're going to tolerate this. What happens when you start getting these hard freezes or a lot of hard rains, a lot of the weather that we've been experiencing? Usually, what comes into play is that it reduces the bloom time, the longevity of the bloom time with a lot of our plants.
Right.
And you're just hoping that you get that show as long as you can get it.
Right.
But I love the phlox. You know, and the only downside to the phlox is this, is that, you know, once they give us that beautiful blooming show in the spring, like right now, they're in their heyday. You know, they're at their best. Then, it, you know, it's just a green plant, but that's okay. But they have their application in the landscape, that's for sure. And they work well amongst, like, if you have hillsides, it holds, you know, the soil back. It provides some erosion control. It's great in rock gardens, so there's a lot of benefits to the creeping phlox. And this is the time of year that we talk most about the phlox, but that's because they're in bloom.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. Can we move them now, or should we wait till...
Oh, no. Don't move them now. They're in full bloom. That would be one of the worst things that you can do.
Okay.
Yeah, no, because right now a lot of energy is in a bloom cycle.
Okay.
So, you know, refrain from doing that. But, you know, get out to your local garden centers and pick up some phlox. They're readily available. Also, I'll tell you something else that's really, really, really rocking is the Iberis, the candy tuft, in full bloom right now. And it is just like a snow mound, kind of just gorgeous. That's like a little snowball right now.
Nice.
And purity is one that a lot of people gravitate towards. And it's one of those things. Aquilegia is a... another great perennial, columbine, that you can use. So there's a lot out there. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and just see what's new, what's coming in. We're all excited. You know, just it's our time of year, and we're ready to bring it.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the three-step program. We'll be right back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And since it is going to be such a gorgeous weekend, this might be the weekend that you really get started on that three-step program. Hopefully you got the first step down already.
Oh, yeah. If you've yet to do it, there's still plenty of time. And if you're like some of us, too, you know, with the intermittent rains and so forth and, the ups and downs with the temperatures.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to keep up with my yard as quickly as I'd like to.
You know, last week when there was just that little bit of break in between the rain,
yeah,
I was able to get the front yard cut. But the backyard where we have the runoff from the back, the houses behind us, it was so soggy I couldn't do that. So now it's rained twice after that, and the backyard looks like a jungle. So,
well, you get that big mower. You can take care of it.
I do.
But you take a big bite out of it.
I will. I'll have to raise it up a little bit more and probably cut it twice.
That would be a good idea.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to walk out there, I mean, would you go down? Would you, like, sink up to your kneecap?
It's still squishy, so I'm going to wait till Sunday afternoon.
You know, that might be a good thing.
Yeah.
That would be a good idea. But certainly take advantage of the weather now. It looks like things are going to hopefully climb and move back upward and perhaps stay there.
Yeah.
We'll all cross our fingers. And this would be a great weekend to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, if you've yet to do so, and pick up your Fertilume three-step program. Buy all three bags. Mm-hmm. Have them on deck. Take a magic marker, write on the orange bag. That's the Lawn Food Plus Iron. And just put September on the other orange bag, just write on it and put middle of November. And the red one, put her down.
Yeah.
And the most important thing that you can do right now is get that protection against some of the unwanted pesky weeds, or if you're having crabgrass issues. The first step is truly going to really help you with a lot of those problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, something I did notice, it seemed like as soon as I cut it around the perimeter of a couple of the yards around us, the dandelions just exploded, just erupted. You didn't notice them there before, and then bam.
And you know what? Some of those sneak in late in the season.
Uh-huh.
And just keep in mind, as we go throughout the course of the year, you know, the spring and summer months, the effectiveness of the prodiamine, you know, it decreases as we get towards the latter part of the season. And when we get into that part of the season, a lot of times that's when some things kind of sneak in under the radar, and there they are early in the spring. And I'm glad you brought up the dandelion situation. Every year I'll get one or two.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about using some of the traditional everyday products to get rid of the dandelions itself. Now, and one that I like a lot is Weed-Free Zone. The real important thing here to take into consideration is if you want to spray the dandelions, and if you just have a few, I encourage you just pick the blooms and then spray the plant. The blooms are attracting the bees.
So
we got to be responsible stewards of the earth here and protect our bees, protect all of our pollinators, mm-hmm. all the beneficial insects that are out there. And yeah, it's a fine line to walk. And believe me, we're walking the fence line all the time because, you know, I really care about what's going on with our pollinators and the mm-hmm. bees. And mm-hmm. Also, I really want a nice looking lawn. So that all comes into play, and it's just being responsible when we start using some of these products. And the other day, I had a couple of dandelions, and usually what I'll do, I'll just take my pocket knife and dig down there and pull it out.
Sure.
And sometimes they're a little deep because it has such a tap root. Boy. And just the other day, I just picked a couple of the blooms off and went ahead and sprayed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I sprayed it and took the blooms away so the bees wouldn't be attracted to it. So just, you know, if you can do that. Now, if you have a yard that's riddled with dandelions, I'm sure, you know, don't let your neighbors drive by and see you out there on your knees pulling all the blooms. I mean, sure. that's ludicrous.
All right, and if they do, tell them you're going to make some dandelion wine.
Yeah, there you go, a little dandelion wine. Absolutely. But, you know, get that yard back into shape. And also, I want to remind you, you know, we often talk about the Fertilum three-step program. You know, the fertilization of our lawn throughout the season and keeping the crabgrass and unwanted, you know, pesky weeds out. You know, it's a pre-emergent, you know, mm-hmm. in the first step. But it's not the magic bullet. You have to have a lawn. And that leads me into this. If you, you know, if your lawn's really thin, it's sparse, you know, or you have a lot of weed issues, you know, we need to get the turf reestablished. And we've been talking a lot about it, too. A tall fescue is really what's going to be best suited for us in our area. And look for the new Fine Lawn H2O, which is the formerly renowned, everyone knows all about it, the Fine Lawn Elite. But Fine Lawn H2O, you can only find it at your local independent garden centers and nurseries. So right now is an ideal time to start working on getting the turf back to into play. So it's that time, Ernie. We're turning the corner, and it's starting to happen, and it's going to take off.
Yeah, because all of a sudden, and all the parties are going to be coming your way, the wedding receptions, the graduation parties. You want that lawn looking good, and we're trying to help you out. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk a little bit about some landscape beds and some things you want to make sure that you're prepared for. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Plenty of ways to stay connected with us. You can give us a call at 749-B105, or you can stay connected via our Facebook page. Look us up and like us. We're going to like you right back, and we always have some great stuff to share on that page. And you can post pictures and post questions, and we'll get some solutions to you. Our friend Chris Green was very informative last week about some of the home inspection things. Looking forward to talking back with him again. And I noticed before we get to the landscaper, maybe we could talk right about this landscape. You posted some pictures of some gorgeous plants on our Facebook page. Some Easter lilies.
Oh, yeah.
And those things are gigantic.
Aren't they? Look at those hydrangea blooms.
That's
stunning.
Probably my favorite.
They're stunning.
Those colors.
Can you see the colors?
Well, it might not be the same ones you see, but I see some colors.
But, well, what colors do you see?
I see blue and yellow, and it might be pink or purple, but I'm not
blue
sure.
And pink. You see blue and pink. And that's all, on the hydrangeas, and that has a lot to do with the pH level of the soil that they're mm-hmm. in. So the blues are just stunning. And also, you know, the Easter lilies, so, you know, in a couple more weeks, it's Easter.
Yeah.
They're looking stellar. And you talk about a fragrance that's just radiating and sweeping through the greenhouses. It's the fragrance of the lily. Oh, my gosh. And this is what we all live for, like in our world,
sure.
in the garden center world, is
that moment,
this time of year. And you know, even Bob Bard and I were talking a few weeks ago. We were just talking about the smell of good, deep, rich soil. And And just that alone, believe it or not, when you're used to it and you're around it, it just has that great fragrance to it. It's just there. It just smells so good. Mm-hmm. Almost to the point, and I'm saying this facetiously, you just want to take a big bite of it.
Pick it up. I was going to say, you don't want to pick it up and take a chomp out of it.
Yeah, no. It.
Or bury your face in it and just, man.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. And I just want to share those photographs because right now it's spring and it's spring in the greenhouses. Yeah. And even more reason, when we talk about getting out to your local garden centers and nurseries, we mean it. We want you to see what's new. We want you to see what's in bloom and what's happening right now at this point in time. And the moment's coming, you know, and then Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that'd be here before you know it.
Yep. And now, let me ask you, we're looking at this picture on our In and Around the House Facebook page, and it's Tony holding a couple of plants in the garden center. And the plant that's just over your right shoulder, you're holding the
five large blooms on it.
Right. And then there's a group of plants behind it. Are those the same plants, just a different color?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's the hydrangeas on the bench, you know, in the greenhouse. And it's just, like I said, you just can't beat it. Second to none. It's just that time of year, and I love it.
Yeah, for everyone else that's colorblind also, they'll understand why I'm asking that question. There's nothing worse than walking in and going, I really like that blue plant over there. Yeah. No, well, it's not blue, but.
And you know, I ran into somebody, it was a few weeks ago, that knows you, and she went on to tell me, Ernie used to be my painter. And I just burst out into laughter, and she's like, well, what's so funny? And I said, do you have any idea, or were you ever aware of the fact that he's colorblind?
That's right.
And she said no. And I said, oh, I guess I could tell you some stories.
Yeah. Maybe that's why you always use the numbers and write the numbers on the walls of your painting.
It's funny.
With a pencil.
Yeah. There you go. Color by number.
Yeah.
That helps you in every way, shape, and form, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Paint by color. That's you.
Check out the In and Around the House Facebook page. Look us up and like us and check out those blooms in those photos. Just absolutely beautiful. And that's why we're encouraging you to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. And that leads us to think a little bit and talk a little bit about your landscape. And it's one of those things where we want to find out if there's anything we can do to help you is send us a question or pose a question and let us try to help you out. But there's some ways to prevent the things that you are
absolutely
going to be faced with.
And, you know, later on in the show, too, I want to bring this up. One of our Facebook followers, Rob Mitchell, had asked me the other day about, controlling grubs. And a great question. And Rob's from Colorado, and his statement was, you know, things here are a lot different than they are back in Colorado. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, grub control and things that we can do to keep that at bay, so to speak. And also, too, coming up here at the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to have some special guests in here with us, Ernie, Vicky Tuas from Thistle Hair Farm. You know Vicky.
I do.
And we used to do a lot of call-ins with Vicky, just getting reports, what was going on at the markets and so forth. And she has a couple of other friends that are in town, and we'll tell you about what's going on in regards to why these friends of Vicky's are in town. But that would be Ben Cohen, and he's the owner of Small House Farms, and I believe Ben is from Michigan, and also Karen Golden. So what we're going to talk about here in the 7 o'clock hour is the Ohio Valley Seed Swap event that's taking place today at the Boone County Enrichment Center, which is out there on Burlington Pike. And that will be taking place today, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. A lot of things going on out there, and we're going to talk about it here at the top of the hour. A lot of information, and we're going to talk a lot about seed saving and things that you can do and techniques and why it's so important. So you definitely want to stay in tune with that.
Now, think about our landscape beds. We talked last week a little bit about how you can prevent some of those weeds and seeds from blowing in, some of them that might have already gotten into there from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to spend a lot of time on your knees picking and pulling. What can we do now if we're getting ready to get out there and get to work?
You know, it's a great question. You know, there's a couple of things that we can do, and probably the best approach for keeping weeds out of the landscape beds is taking more of a proactive approach and using a pre-emergent. And when we talk about pre-emergence, you know, we're talking about products that keeps weed seed from germinating. And therefore, you're not on your knees, you're not kneeling on a pad, and it makes some of the chores that you have to do in the landscape a lot easier.
Uh-huh.
And you can take that time that you save and in fact, go and do something else. I do want to caution you about this. And, you know, if you have vegetable gardens, I do not encourage you or want you any way whatsoever to use these pre-emergent products in your vegetable gardens, especially when you're consuming your own vegetables that you're growing, or you have kids in there picking tomatoes or cherry tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do is keep this clean and simple as possible. And, you know, and there's another approach, which is why I'm bringing this up, that you can use as a weed preventer in your vegetable gardens, and that is using corn gluten. That's a good way to use a product as a pre-emergent that's safe. You have to do it a little bit more often, but nonetheless, it can be very effective in helping keeping weeds at bay in your garden. You could also mulch with straw. You could also put down like weed barriers in your garden beds to keep weeds at bay, because it's so important to keep weeds out of your vegetable gardens, because they're competing for moisture and nutrients against what you're trying to grow.
Okay.
You know, when you're growing those wonderful tomatoes or peppers, cucumbers, all that good stuff, weeds are in competition with those. So keeping those out of the beds is of the utmost importance.
Sure. It's you want to be careful about anything you put in the beds that you're going to be growing vegetables, because eventually it goes from the soil into the plant and into
that's why we're really trying to keep it as clean as possible. But when we come back out of the break here, I'm going to tell you know, how you can keep things out of your landscape bed other than, we were just talking a moment about the vegetable beds.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different approach altogether. But in the landscape, turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper from High Yield is a great, great pre-emergent. Get it down. Save yourself some time and aggravation down the road from having to pull things. And that contains the product that we often talk about, called Dimension.
And we'll talk about that when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've got some guests that will be joining us here shortly.
Yes, we do. That's Vicki Tuis, Ben Cohen, and Karen Golden. We're going to talk about the Ohio Valley Seed Swap event that's taking place here, just coming up around 10 a.m. this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Out at the Boone County Enrichment Center in Burlington. So that's going to be happening around a 7 o'clock hour, give or take, and a lot of interesting information. So definitely want to hang in there with us. And when we get up to around the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about our plant of the week,
mm-hmm.
which has seasonal interest all year long.
Nice.
One of my favorite shrubs of all time. So hang in there with us.
And we also now want to turn your attention to your landscape beds and pre-emergence.
And now's the time to do it. You know, we're not too far away where those soil temperatures are right there and just at their peak for germination with a lot of the weed seed that's lying there dormant right now.
Yeah.
So in the landscape beds, what's really important too is a couple things come into play here. One of two products that you can use successfully. One is Preen. We're all familiar with Preen.
Uh-huh.
And the other one that we've been just talking about a second ago is Dimension. And I have to say, I'm going to let the pendulum swing more towards into the direction of Dimension,
uh-huh.
because you get another additional month of protection, another 30 days on average. And it's a lot less expensive than Preen. And that's why I say it all the time. Just because, you know, some of these products that we talk about, these companies aren't big advertisers, so they're not spending all their budget on advertising, and they can keep the price down.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the product is to be applied is on top of the mulch. A lot of times seed can get into the beds, and it can actually germinate on top of the mulch. If you want to be a little overkill, and you're swapping or switching, you know, getting rid of the old mulch from last season and adding new mulch, you can put it on the soil surface, thin mulch, and put it on top of the mulch, and, you know, a little overkill there, but nonetheless beneficial. You'll save yourself a lot of bending over.
Yeah, it does make me chuckle a little bit. Many years ago, there was one of these yard ornaments that I guess became really popular, and it looked like your grandmother bent over pulling weeds. You remember that? It was just like
it was a
plywood cutout that you could imagine your grandmother bent over at the waist pulling weeds, and they showed up in landscape beds and on the front. And it was kind of humorous. Well, but we don't want you being that person.
When you said the plywood cart or the plywood silhouette, I'm thinking of the cowboy standing up and doing his thing in your yard. And that's what I thought of when you said that. So.
It's sort of similar to that in that, they would paint them with the moo-moos and the polka dots and all of that stuff. And
do you have any of that kind of stuff in your yard?
No. Got the big elephant fountain.
Oh, and we've heard all about the elephant fountain and the bowl that you're going to pick up and buy. And that's still cracked too, right?
Yeah, we use it now as a planter. We put some flowers in there and decorate it.
Yeah, that's
it. Doesn't operate as a fountain. And then the bird bath in the back, it's pretty much it. But a lot of bird feeders, I love those.
You know, it's funny you say that. I find a lot of gardeners, both the novice and the avid, really being like pulled into all this like yard art, garden art. Whimsical things in the garden. Just for example, the spinners. They move freely in the wind, and especially the last few days, those that we have at the garden center, I thought they were going to take off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to like, hey, I was afraid one was just going to come flying off,
It has been.
And, but those things, the whimsical stuff in the garden, people are really responding well to it and liking that stuff favorably. Also, the solar lit kind of things.
I love those.
People like that stuff. Yep. The gazing balls, the mosaic styles. And the wine bottle trees.
Yeah, those are really popular.
And people
I've
like
seen
that
a couple
stuff.
Of those.
And I saw something in a magazine the other day, and this freaks me out. But there's a lot of people I know that love gnomes.
Uh-huh.
Gnomes freak me out. I don't know what it is about gnomes. I just don't find them cute or adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe a little garden statue of you might be appropriate.
In my kilt.
Yeah. Oh, you're killing me.
Tony, we have Ray on the line from Fairfield, who's got, since we're talking about landscape beds, he's got a mulching question for you. Good morning, Ray. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I guess I'm looking for the pros and cons to mulching compared to not mulching.
Uh-huh. It's night and day, in my opinion. There are a lot of people that opt not to mulch, and I think you're doing yourself a disservice by not mulching. And just think about it. Up in the hillsides here throughout the tri-state, when our trees drop their foliage and leaves in the fall, they're essentially mulching themselves. And mulch provides a number of benefits. One, we're talking about weeds in the landscape bed. Mulch helps suppress weeds. Two, during the hot part of the summer months, it also keeps the soil temperatures relatively decent for our root structures of our perennials, trees, and shrubs. And also it helps with moisture retention. So right there's three key benefits to mulching that I can think of right offhand.
Okay,
and
I guess what I'm looking for, okay, you're saying like with the perennials and that?
Oh, all of your plants, even your annuals.
Okay. But do they still seem to, bush out more?
Oh, absolutely. Now, here's what you want to refrain from doing is, for example, you don't want to over mulch or get too thick with it, because a lot of times people still plant partly in the mulch versus the soil, and their annuals struggle. Or people will bring mulch right up next to their annuals, rather thick, so to speak. And a lot of times, the mulch can burn annuals. Annuals are a little, they're in their early stages when they're developing. You just plant them in a landscape. They're a little tender to that. So, mulch it at 2 to 3 inch layer. And as you get to your plant, if it's an annual, if it's a perennial, if it's a shrub or a tree, taper it down. Don't go up the side of the stem or the trunk or the foliage of the plant.
Yeah. Is there one mulch better than the other? I mean, I see a lot of people with the red mulch or their black mulch.
I will say this. I want to keep you out of the gas stations from buying mulch because, You know, a lot of that stuff in there is what you get. It's what you, you know, what you pay for is what you get.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that.
No, buy a good hard shredded mulch. You know, something, you know, the all bark mulch is really your best bet. That's the outer part of the tree. I also like the pine products. You know, you can buy pine mulch. You can buy mini nuggets, large nuggets. And the beauty of the pine products is this. It doesn't break down as easily as some of the other mulches. For the most part, insect resistant. You don't find a lot of insect issues with the pine products. Pine straw is another really popular mulch here in recent years. It holds extremely well together on a hillside. It doesn't wash away. It allows water to permeate it rather easily. Allows oxygen, air to get to the soil surface. A lot of benefit there with the pine mulch. You know, just go to a really good, reputable garden center or nursery, and because we carry we carry good products. We're not out there just to get a dollar from you.
Yeah.
And
I'm right there, Fairfield. We go to Lakeview all the time.
Yeah, Jim Montag. Yeah, tell him to do something dirty up there when you're up there. Jim's a great guy. I was just talking to he sent me a message the other day. But funny guy as well. And a great garden center there that you have close by. He's got a lot of neat stuff.
Myself, I'm not a big mulcher, but my wife loves it.
Well,
I know who's going to win here.
Yes.
There's
it's not really going to be a win. It's not going to be a fight.
Why don't you like the mulch, Ray?
I never have. It seems one year, I don't know if we got bad mulch, but it all clumped up, and it had white, goopy stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to clean all that out there, and it was just a mess.
Yeah.
I always felt like her flowers always looked better without it. She wants it. I would know we're going to have it, so I kind of thought, well, maybe I went about it the first, you know, when we did it the last time, that something happened. I don't know what all that white. And then it's coming out. The mulch was coming out in big clumps.
Yeah, you got to question the type of mulch that you're using. Use a good quality mulch. I'll tell you one that I really like a lot. It's a little salty in price, but you really don't have to mulch for 2 years or so. It holds up extremely well. It's grade A cypress. And when you get the grade A cypress, it's the outer part of the cypress tree. It's all bark, nice texture to it. I love it. I've been using it the last couple of years. And again, you don't have to mulch the next season. You take your garden weasel tool, turn up the mulch. The mulch bed looks fresh. It looks great. And then you don't have to mulch that next season. You're saving yourself some time and money in the long run. And you're getting a great quality product. It's insect resistant and also decay resistant.
So it's cypress.
Yeah. You know what? I know Jim carries grade A cypress. Just buy a bag. Try it. I always tell people, if you're interested in a certain type of mulch, don't go all out and do all of your beds. Just do one small one with a mulch that you're interested in and evaluate it from that point.
Put it around the knockouts, too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Have a good weekend, bud.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. As soon as he said his wife wanted the mulch, I knew who was going to win that.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. The only time I win at home is with the TV.
Is that right?
Oh, man. Feathers get way out. Some come out. My plumage, man, it gets disrupted like nobody's business.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to be getting ready. Our guests will be showing up shortly. We'll get them settled in. We'll get started talking about the Ohio Valley seed swap. Plus, we have some other tips coming your way in just a few minutes. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, we need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And our guests have arrived. And I'll let Tony handle the introductions.
Oh, you got to mic me up over here. And we have with us this morning, we have Vicki Tuis from Thistle Hair Farm, and Ben Cohen, and welcome Ben, and Karen Golden. Welcome Karen, and I understand, Ben, you from Michigan?
I am.
All right, well, welcome to the Bluegrass State.
Thank you, it's beautiful here.
Yeah, a lot of people say that they like good old Kentucky. And it seems like the Ohio people don't. They don't want to come across the muddy river. I don't know why that is.
Nothing like stirring the pot.
No, nothing like stirring the pot. And Karen, you too, you're from
I am. Southeast Michigan.
Pure Michigan, right yeah. there, both of you. And most of you who follow us on Saturdays in and around the house, you're familiar with Vicky. She, when we get her to call in and tell us what's going on at the market, that was always a great report.
It was. It was really interesting to be able to let everybody know what was at market each Saturday morning.
Yeah, I always would look forward to that, too, and hopefully stop over and see you, and you have some goodies for me.
Yeah. But,
I miss that. And the fresh asparagus, too, when that
and
comes by.
And we picked the first yesterday.
Did you really?
Wow.
Yes.
So it won't
that's
be long.
Hard to believe. Wow. So it's coming.
It is. It's
you
good.
need to take care of me. Nothing like fresh.
Forgotten.
Is that a little demanding on my part? I'm sorry.
No, I haven't forgotten you, but Ed and I do get to eat the first.
Well, you should, right?
That's
through,
tradition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, what we have going on today is the Ohio Valley Seed Swap, and this is the second year for it, correct?
It is the second year. New location, though.
New location. And last year was great, by the way, because I forgot where it was. It was over here in Cincinnati.
It was at the Enright Eco
That's
Village.
That's right. Yes.
Yes. But we instantly outgrew that spot.
Well, that's good.
So, yes. So we have moved it now over to the Boone County Cooperative Extension at the Enrichment Center, mm-hmm. a new building facility that they've put in. And we should be going strong today.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I have to ask you this, and hang in there, guys, from Michigan, because we're coming your way. Vicky, what really prompted you to pull this together, this event? I mean, what was the catalyst for it?
Oh, probably 5 or 6 years ago, I went to my first swap. Mm-hmm. And it was at Bill Best's farm in Berea, Kentucky. And Bill is a retired professor from Berea College, who used to go home to the mountains. And when he was there, he started collecting the foods, the seeds for the foods that he grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually got into producing these old varieties to save them and the stories behind them, and then started sharing them. And I was really inspired to see how much food we have lost as far as ability to purchase in the stores, mm-hmm. because food has been changed since the big grocery stores have gone into effect, and they have been hybridized to where they ship, you know, they're firm and they ship, or they're perfect in shape or something mm-hmm. like that. And through that process, we are losing some of the flavors and varieties that are available. So
yeah, they even say that with corn. I hear that all the time. And even its nutritional value has decreased over the recent years. Interesting. And Ben, we're talking with Ben Cohen. And tell us a little bit about you and your background and the business that you have. And you're a seed collector as well, right?
Oh, I am. I am. I'm from a small house farm is what we call it.
Small house farm?
Central Michigan. If you can see my hand, we're in Michigan. We can point right at our hand. I'm right in the middle of the mitten. You know, we do a number of things out there. We grow a lot of our own food. We're not market growers by any means. We just grow for ourselves. But I am an avid seed saver. You know, we grow most every variety that we grow on our farm is from seed that we save.
Mm-hmm.
And we also save seeds from a number of different places. And I take them everywhere I go. I have boxes of seeds I brought with me for the seed swap today that we're going to share with everybody. Lots and lots of seeds.
I brought mine in from last year that I didn't plant, and I forgot what they are, but maybe you guys can help me identify it. But it was a neat event. It really was. And if you're able to get out to the Boone County Enrichment Center in Burlington and take part of this seed swap, you're going to really find it's a great, interesting event. And my dad was so impressed with it last year. And that was the first time he'd ever experienced anything like that, even myself as well. But it was really cool, and I thought it was neat. Today, I can't. I got too much to do in the nursery. I got to bring things out. I got to put things back outside that I've been bringing in all week. So
I know.
I don't mean to be like that, but unfortunately,
you're going to miss out on a good time.
I know. If I can sneak away, how's that?
It would be wonderful.
Because it goes on from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. today, correct?
Correct. That's right.
All right.
And we will have not just the seed swap going on. We also have a series of workshop classes that will be covering everything from building quality soil
mm-hmm.
all the way up to how to save seeds. And then Ben will talk more about building community through this process in a seed library type thing.
In a sustainable way, right? It's all about sustainability with seed collecting and saving.
Oh, absolutely.
And we let's go with Karen here real quick. Karen, you're a seed collector as well. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
I have a small micro farm at home. I actually am unique because I don't sell seeds. I collect them via my awesome friends. I specialize in tomatoes. I think I have 175 different varieties of heirloom tomatoes listed on my website this year.
Wow.
Cool.
100 and some peppers, and I've moved into herbs, and then my actually what I'm known for is my lettuce bowls.
Well, let me ask you a quick question, because Tony and I were talking about this a few minutes. What is it about local guys and women, too, I guess, that they insist on being the first one to produce a tomato, no matter what? It is like a race in this area.
Have you ever had a tomato from the grocery store?
I have, yeah. And we just can't figure out why they will start trying to creep in as soon as possible.
It's just competition.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is everybody thinks get them out early and we'll have the first tomato, and it's not always that way. Yeah. Tomatoes want the heat, and they want it drier. We have two wet of springs around here, and the tomatoes will just sit there and not grow.
Yeah.
Until the heat comes on.
I have a couple of local friends. We get together every Friday after work to socialize and refresh ourselves, so to speak. And every year, it is a race to be the first guy into the garage with his first tomato.
And the biggest.
And the biggest.
Oh, and the biggest. Yeah. And it's a backyard good old boys club
that's
thing.
Exactly it's, what it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like those guys because I tell them all the time when they leave with tomato plants, it's too early. And when they sit in the soil like that, and the temperatures of the soil are so cool, or not even what they're accustomed to being when they're in a greenhouse, they don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I like about those guys and those customers? I see them again.
Yeah. I actually won't release them. My customers now know I won't release them. And they'll say, what do you mean? I said, well, I'll give you your money back. But yeah. You see, because basic psychology says when that plant fails, I failed. But when the plant does great, because you follow what I'm telling you to
they
do.
They did great.
Then I rock. So
that's right.
I won't release them.
Interesting. Well, usually they do well. You don't get the credit anymore. They come back to you when it fails.
Well,
that's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
Luckily, though, for me, they're doing well because I won't, you know, I set them up to do well. So they do come back. So that's a good thing.
And this might be an odd question, but how long do you think it's going to take us to recover the ground we've lost because of the mass productions? And, you know, what caught my ear when you guys were talking about corn, I can remember growing up and eating corn from my father's garden that just had this wonderful taste. And stuff we get today, it could be that I'm, you know, much, much older now, but just doesn't have that flavor.
It wasn't bred for flavor. In no way, shape, or form was any of the food that's being mass-produced.
For looks, I guess, and size.
No, actually, shipability.
Shipability?
Yeah, that's the number one factor.
I want to be able to put my melon on a truck, and I want to drive it across the country, and then I want to be able to load it into a grocery store and have it sit there for 2 weeks and still be a melon. You know, we have sacrificed so much flavor and nutritional value, so many things, for convenience, so we can have a grocery store stocked full of all these things.
Wow.
You know? And unblemished fruits.
Yeah.
A consumer base, we don't want seconds.
Right, right. Yeah,
yeah. That's that waxy. Think about the waxy feel that's on the outside of a cucumber versus what you just pull out of the garden, night and day.
Mm.
Now, of course, what you pull out of the garden, you better consume rather quickly or in a few days. You know,
sure.
Those can't linger around.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, I think the pendulum is already swinging.
Is it?
And I think from what I'm seeing in my small little pocket of the world, people are going to start doing what we're supposed to do. We're going to start growing local, and we're going to start producing our own food, and there's going to be, hopefully, a barter system. And, you know, I grow too many cucumbers, and Vicky has a lot of asparagus, and it's the way it was supposed to be. It's
sure.
the way it should be.
They're calling those crop swaps.
Crop swaps. I like
right.
That.
And that's where they meet up on Tuesday night, and everybody brings whatever's extra from their garden, and they just swap.
Nice.
And that also builds community. They start having potlucks through it and things like that. So it's the concept is really good that they're getting these fresh items into their diet again, which we have lost over the years, and they're building community. So I think it's a great thing.
Now, what do you do for a guy like Ernie that would come to that crop swap, and he wouldn't have any crops to swap? Didn't you charge him?
No, you know, a lot of skilled labor.
There you go.
Yeah. Or unskilled labor, depending.
Yeah. Right, you know.
It's, for me, it would be unskilled labor. But
no, you don't need to ever have crops to swap or seeds to swap or anything like that. You know, you can come to the seed swap empty-handed, nothing in your pockets, and we will load you up with seeds and send you home. Absolutely.
And with the idea that you go home, you grow these out, you can eat some of them, but let some go to seed so that you come back next year and trade again.
Sure. Yeah, that's a fantastic service that we're reintroducing, is that farm-to-table idea. And it doesn't, you don't have to go back all that far to realize that our grandparents or our great-grandparents lived longer, were healthier, were more active later in life. And then you look at us and go, what happened? And finally, somebody's starting to recognize that we're not producing our own food. We're not doing it locally, and we're ingesting a lot of things we probably shouldn't.
And if you don't have a place to grow, go and support the farmers at the markets.
Mm-hmm.
By supporting them, you enable them to continue.
That's
and we need them.
Yeah. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking seeds and seed swaps. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And our guests are Vicki Tuis, Ben Cohen, and Karen Golden. And we're talking about the seed swap and how important it is, the farm to table and growing our own food. But before we get back to you guys, we have Samuel on the line from Goshen, who has a question for you about his jalapeno plant. Hi, Sam. What kind of problems are you having?
I saved a lot of seeds last year. And I know it's kind of too cold to really try and get them to germinate right now, is what I think my problem is. But all my seeds are all shriveled up like they're no good, but I don't know.
What do you mean they're all shriveled up?
I mean, usually a seed would be pretty round and plump, and these look pretty almost like they were dehydrated.
Right, flat and crinkly?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're supposed to look like. They're good.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. How many different varieties of peppers did you grow last year?
I did, I think, 7.
Okay, well,
I had jalapenos, banana peppers, bell peppers, some habaneros.
Chances are really good that those jalapenos aren't going to come true.
Say what?
Those the seeds that you collected, they probably won't come true.
Okay.
Peppers are really promiscuous, and unless you... isolated
them. We like
them.
Promiscuous.
unless you isolated them or bagged them.
I bagged them.
Oh, well, then they're going to be fine. Just get them in some heat.
Okay. Usually I take them on a paper towel. I let them dry out a little bit. And I put them in a bag and I stick them in my freezer trying to imitate winter. Is that right?
No.
No.
No, they come from South America. They like it really warm. Actually, put them back in that bag, but put them on top of your refrigerator and get them warm.
Okay. So I should not put any of my seeds in the freezer then?
Do you mean to store them or to grow them?
Store them.
Yes, and the freezer's fine. Yeah, that's exactly where they should be.
Okay, because I had a large problem with mice getting into my seeds, and I did not appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I sure appreciate your time.
All right, yeah, keep us safe.
Will you be able to tell me where the seed swap was again?
Sure. The seed swap is at the Boone County Cooperative Extension Office in Burlington, Kentucky. And it is in the Enrichment Center building, which is located at 1822 Patrick Drive.
Okay. Well, thank you. I sure appreciate it.
Sure. It'd be great to see you there.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
And let us know how those jalapenos and those peppers turn out.
Okay, last year I had a phenomenal crop. I couldn't eat them all.
Then share them.
Oh, yeah. I froze a lot of them and made just sliced peppers and was trading with my neighbors.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
I really appreciate your time, and you have a nice day.
All right, you too, Samuel. Thanks.
I'm sorry, but
nope, right ahead.
Ben, I wanted to ask you, he was talking about the jalapeno peppers and so forth, and I know a lot of times as homeowners we buy seed, a lot of it's hybridized. What typically, give us a little lowdown, what can typically happen when you buy a hybridized type of plant or seed and you grow it that season, And will you necessarily or not necessarily get the same species of plant the following?
Yeah, the likelihood of getting the same plant's very slim. You know, a hybrid is when you take two plants from the same species and you cross them to make kind of a third variety, you know, mm-hmm. for whatever reason. Nowadays, mostly storage and things like that. So there's a mix of the genetics from the maternal and paternal plant. So those seeds that you'll save from your crop are going to be that blend. So you don't know what you're going to get. You know, you can save those seeds and grow them, but it's kind of a shot in the dark what you're going to have there. So a lot of times we recommend people save seeds from open pollinated varieties, which mm-hmm. you can see right on the packet. They're labeled pretty clearly OP. And those are going to come true, you know, as long as, like with the caller that called in, as long as they're isolating their peppers and things like that to prevent cross-pollination, you'll get a nice seed that comes true to form, and then you'll be a happy seed saver.
Give us a definition of what a true heirloom seed is.
Well, heirloom, you know, it's kind of a hip word that everybody's using mm-hmm. right now, but really the loose definition is a seed that's been saved and passed down for 50 years or more. It doesn't need to be an heirloom seed to save it, not by any means. There's some great new tomato varieties out there that I'm saving seeds from. But, you know, you got to think, why were they saving seeds? For 50 years, they've been saving these seeds and passing them along. Maybe because it's a sentimental thing, or it's a historical reason, or it's just the tastiest bean they've ever had. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason that they've been saving it, and that's probably a good reason for us to save them as well, too.
Awesome. And Karen, this is for you. You were talking about how many varieties of tomatoes do you have, or seeds do you have on hand?
My personal collection is about 1,600.
Wow. And, you know, take us through the process of, you know, the way to harvest seed and save tomato seed. You know, the fermentation method. Are there other methods? Or
yeah, actually, there are. I'm going to start with the most simple.
Mm-hmm.
Is to literally scoop the seed out, and I'm talking about a tomato here.
Uh-huh.
Put it on a paper towel, mm-hmm. let it dry,
yeah,
and then sow it the next year. I actually have a variety called Liz's Greek Mystery that was brought to me from a friend that went to Greece,
uh-huh.
and took a bite of a tomato on a salad and spit the seeds in the napkin.
Wow.
And they germinated just fine. So I tell people that because they can, people new to gardening can get overwhelmed with the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell people, keep it simple. Keep it simple. Don't get, with the power of the internet, people go, I don't want to do it because there's so much information. But you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The second way, and probably the best way, is to ferment them. And when we say ferment, why are we fermenting it? It's because through the process of fermentation, it is killing any of the topical diseases that might be on the seed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as simple as scooping the juice out into anything that would hold water. It doesn't have to be fancy. With the juices and setting it on your counter for 3 to 5 days, and mm-hmm. there will be a white, moldy substance that's
right.
on the top.
Right.
Run it through a sieve underneath your kitchen sink.
Mm-hmm.
And get them all cleaned out. I add a step that a lot of people don't, but I think it's really important, and that is to put a 1 to 10 bleach solution.
Really?
Yes. It's huge. That it's a triple layer of protection for disease. And then run them through clear water again.
Right.
And then I spread them out actually on just regular old screen. Like from your,
right.
like your screen door.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just put them on a paper towel
right.
or put them on a paper plate. I find that if you put them on screen, then it doesn't stick, and then they're all nice
right.
and fluffy.
Right, that makes sense. So is it true that the gel, the pulp gel, if you don't remove that from the outer side or the around the seed, does that prevent it from germinating the next year?
It,
is that what we're trying to do, is eliminate that pulp or that gel
yes.
substance that's around the seed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that true? Is that how
it,
that?
It is, but it... It will naturally break down.
Okay.
It has its own acids. It will naturally break down, but it is a germination inhibitor. It absolutely is.
Yeah, because when you leave tomatoes on the ground in the garden itself, I mean, the next year you'll see them sprouting, mm-hmm. so that whole process has already taken place mm-hmm. naturally.
Exactly.
Right, imagine you're a tomato seed and you're inside of a tomato in the garden. You know, it's warm and it's sunny and it's moist. It's the perfect environment to sprout a tomato seed. So nature has that growth inhibitor that they
right.
put in there. You know, nature's smart. So it's one step ahead. So the fermenting of the tomato seeds, it's a good workaround. You know, mm-hmm. it's a good way to guarantee better germination.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Vicki, Ben, and Karen with us. We're talking a little bit about seeds and, again, wealth of information. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to gather some contact information for them and remind you again where the Ohio Valley Seed Swap will be, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Vicki Tuas, Ben Cohen, and Karen Golden in with us, and we're talking seed swap. And going to be a great chance for you to get out and get some more information.
Yeah, and you give us a little bit of information, your website, Karen.
MichiganHeirlooms.com.
A lot of stuff on there. I've already checked it out. And Ben, yourself, what's the contact for you on the...
Our website is smallhousefarm.com.
And Vicki, do you have anything under Thistle Hair?
I don't have a website.
You have a Facebook
presence. I have a Facebook page, and it is under Thistle Hair Farm Followers. And I post pretty regularly about what we are harvesting and have available, or an event that we're having, or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can keep up to date on our farm through that.
And Ben, tell us a little bit, some of the benefits or the importance of getting together as a community, collectively, everybody who enjoys gardening, and having a seed swap. What are the benefits of having a seed swap?
Well, first and foremost, the fun. You know, it's a lot of fun to get together with everybody. And, you know, I say with everything, if you're not having fun, there's no point in doing it. So that's my number one with everything, is it's a good time. You know, it's great to swap seeds, swap stories with people. You know, we can learn from each other, learn from each other's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you save seeds inside of a community, you build on that. You build the adaptability of these plants. You know, you get the local flavors that you enjoy. I've been to places where I've had people, like, well, I was just in Pikeville, Kentucky last weekend for their seed swap. And I got some beans from a lady, and her family has been growing these beans for over 100 years. They've been passing this bean down, you know, and that's history in action. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you can tap into that and hold on to that and keep that, it's just an amazing thing.
Now, will you journal all that information yourself and keep track of
the
history behind? Because we were talking about the beans, the Trail of Tears. Tell us a little bit about that. You know, the stories behind some of the seeds, too, are incredible and very, very interesting.
Yeah, the Cherokee Trail of Tears, you know, it's a nice pole bean. I've been growing that one for a few years. It's, you know, the historical story of that is, you know, when the Native Americans were removed from their homeland by the government and forced to move to another place, it became known as the Trail of Tears when the Cherokee natives had to leave. You know, it was a very sad time for them, and they brought things with them that were of importance, you know, food being number one. And not only does it sustain them, but it's their connection to their ancestors. So they brought those seeds with them. And, you know, it is a sad story that comes with that. But when we can hold on to that and remember their legacy by growing those seeds, that's something special, you know. And that seed's actually special for me. That was the very first seed I ever saved. That was given to me by an heirloom gardener. You know, it was 8 years ago. He reached up and pulled it off the plant and put it in my hand. He said, "You take these seeds home, Ben, and you save them. You share them with your friends." And, you know, that moment changed my life. And that's what I do. I share those seeds with people everywhere I go.
Awesome.
749-B105 in and around the house. We have a couple of callers we need to get to quickly before we come back and talk with you guys. Tony, we have, I hope I'm saying this right, Treva from Blanchester's got a question about planting bulbs that she should have already planted by now, or she should have planted in the fall.
Uh-oh.
Are you there still, Treva?
Yes.
Okay, and go ahead with Tony with your question.
Okay, I have a couple questions. The one is about the bulbs. They're the Ranunculus.
Ranunculus. Mm-hmm.
We bought them last August. We did not plant them, unfortunately. And someone told me if I put them in the refrigerator for 2 or 3 weeks and put them in the ground when the ground is warm, that they'll grow. Is that true?
You know, I don't know what the gestation period is for ranunculus. You know, for example, like tulips and daffodils, it's a 16-week period. So they would be in your refrigerator for some time.
I can't hear you.
The ranunculus, I don't know what the gestation period or cooling down period would be. For example, tulips and daffodils, it's at least 16 weeks of cooling. So that would be a long time in your refrigerator. My first question to you is, what is the firmness of the bulb like? Is when you squeeze it, is it brittle? Is it dry?
Yeah, it's crunchy.
Yeah, and I seriously would doubt if they're viable still. Unfortunately, you know, that's the problem when we leave them. Hopefully, I don't know where you probably left them in a bag or maybe perhaps forgot about them.
Well, I did, but I put them in the refrigerator about a week ago.
Oh, yeah. If they're brittle and crumbly, or you can squeeze them and it's not firm, wait until next fall. Okay. You would just be wasting your time with that. And if it helps you any, if misery loves company, I've done that before, too. So.
Okay. I have another question.
Yes.
A friend of mine gave me some seeds. They're bag ball or ball bag tomatoes. You ever heard of them?
Bull's bag?
Yeah. I planted, they're up, they're about 4 inches taller, so there's 7 in the little teapot. And they've all got 2 leaves on them. Should I wait till they have more leaves on them to repot them, or go ahead and do it?
I would say you could go ahead. If they've got their second set of true leaves, then you can probably go ahead and separate them and individually pot them up.
Okay, cool. I'll do that.
And plant them deeper, too, when you transplant those.
Yeah.
The beauty of tomato plants is that you can plant them a little deeper. So instead of them being tall and lanky, it gets a little difficult inside when you're growing things inside. And you always see where things want to lean towards the light. So
they are.
And on really nice days, don't be apprehensive about taking them outside and letting them, you know, just getting them acclimated. Because natural light's obviously the best. We all know that. And if we have any more of those nights like this past night, just bring them in for the evening.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you all so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, and we have Sam on the line from Goshen wanting to know if he can save his daffodils. Sam, do you have some you want to plant, or are you trying to save the ones that are up already?
No, I'm trying to save the ones that are already up.
And we mean in what way when you want to save them? Are they in the ground? I take it they're in the ground.
Yeah, they've been in the ground for roughly 40 to 50 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think there's, 2,000 to 3,000 daffodils and probably several hundred tulips.
Wow, so they've naturalized over the course of time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I bet it's a beautiful bed.
And they should have been divided. But I'm getting ready to bring my bobcat in and tear the rest of the place down. So I'd really would like to try and either, do I need to just cut these off and dig them?
I'm not in favor of that because I always like for those to die back naturally.
Right.
Because a lot of the energy is still up in the foliage, and as it starts to, you know, decline, that energy works its way back down into the bulb and stores energy in the bulb, carbohydrates and sugars and so forth. So that's an important thing because, and there's been times I've cut them back, and the next season they were okay. But you also risk that they might come up and be blind. You know, there's a lot of things that could obviously come into play.
Are you in a situation where you have to get them out because
of excavating?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It would be probably scrap, for sure, if I bring my excavator and bobcat in.
Bring them up now. Cut them back.
You had nothing to lose.
Right. And here's the thing. As long as most of the energy is through the flower... So if you stop them from flowering, you're going to save a lot of energy that's going to go back in the bulb. Put them.
That's a problem because they're all flowering.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that'll.
You know, the other thing you could do, you could dig them all up and put them in a situation and let them flower naturally and die back naturally. The sun will.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You know what I mean?
Right. Basically, just transplant them then,
or just leave them up on top of the ground.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, literally. Just
and then plant them later in the season.
Photosynthesis will work, and when the flower dies back, just take care of them like that.
Okay, well, that's awesome. Now I got some really big hostas out here. Now those I can just transplant.
Yeah, you can do that now. Are they just starting to unfurl?
They
still look like spears?
Yet.
Okay. Yeah, the spring's a good...
out the ground.
I think you can pull that off, too. That's not a problem at all.
I'm pretty sure you can't kill a hosta.
No, and actually a lot of people like to divide those in the springtime. You know, as they start poking up through the soil surface and look kind of resemble asparagus spears.
Right.
The asparagus I'm trying to get Vicky to bring into me here in a couple weeks.
Intense.
These hostas are probably, 5 foot around.
Oh, wow. Pretty good. Great size.
Oh, they're beautiful. But, how many times do you think I could divide them? Are they really picky? They're pretty hardy.
I would try, and when you divide it, you know, just try and get 2 to 3 eyes.
Okay.
And that'd be ample. That'd be plenty enough, and then just go with it from there. And temporarily, until you move, you can put them in pots. Go to your local nursery or garden center and see if you can buy some 1-gallon, 2-gallon pots, and you'll have some nice starters.
Oh, yeah. I got all the buckets.
All right. Well, happy gardening.
I got another question about apple trees now.
Go ahead.
Now, I'm trying to start apple seeds, but they won't seem to get out of the hull.
I'm not that familiar with that. And I don't even know how successful that truly would be.
Okay.
Yeah, that And I would even know the whole process, to be honest. I'd have to do a little bit of research. You know, and I'll tell you a good, you might get with David Kester. He might know a little bit more about that.
David Kester at the Boone County Cooperative Extension Office in Burlington is the person to talk to about fruits.
Okay.
And if you want his number, I can give that to you.
Yeah, I sure appreciate that.
Okay, it's
859-586-6101. I heard I could scratch the hull with some light sandpaper.
That is one of the steps for harder shelled type seeds.
So that is a real idea then?
Right, it is.
It's called scarification.
Okay. Have you ever heard of a German strawberry tomato?
No.
Okay, I'll have to bring some seeds up then.
Yeah, but let us know how it goes. Unfortunately, we got to cut to a break, and just keep us informed as to what you find out about the seed. How's that?
All right, sure appreciate it.
All right, have a good weekend. Thanks.
Yeah, you too.
749 B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. We're talking seed swaps. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, boy, we're getting a wealth of information here this morning about seeds and how to store and really promoting the farm-to-table or garden-to-table ideas. And these guests have been working very hard locally to make sure that we're saving seeds and...
It's preserving our livelihood all the way around, no matter how you look at it. And, you know, I think this all lends itself to something I wanted to ask Ben. I understand that you've helped open up several different types of seed libraries in the state of Michigan. And I was just curious, you know, what does that entail? What is that all about?
Well, you know, a lot of these seed libraries, we've been opening them in public libraries. You know, it's kind of set up just for that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to how a library works. You know, you come in, as opposed to checking out books, you check out seeds. You know, we have a great selection, and they've been using, they've been repurposing old card catalogs and storing them, you know, using them for seed storage. So it's really neat. And then people can come from the community, and they can check out the seeds, and they get the education, and they take them home and to grow them. And, you know, and in theory, we want the people to then bring the seeds back, you know, like... save their seeds.
For the next following season.
So we can make it a sustainable program.
And build it.
You know, there's a lot of seed companies that donate seeds to these programs to keep them functioning. But really the goal ultimately is to get people in the community saving their seeds and making it a sustainable program in and of itself.
Yeah, and that's just what I was going to ask you next. And when you say sustainable, that means clean as possible, too, in a lot of ways. No?
It is. Well, you know, that's a preference, I suppose.
Right,
you know, it's not mandatory.
Okay, so.
But we push people towards organic style of growing. You know, it's a free for all. Once they take the seeds home, they're going to do what they want with them.
Exactly.
But we encourage them to keep it as clean as possible.
Got it. You know, this is so important too, because we've talked about this once before, Ernie, in the past, the World Seed Bank that's located in Norway and how important it is to, you know, if we were ever to have some sort of a nuclear fallout or some catastrophe, we have a way to go back and preserve history and pull out of those that seed bank. And you just mentioned something a moment ago, Ben, that they've already been in there as a result of what's going on in
Syria. You know, in 2015, they actually had to withdraw number seeds. They have a seed bank in Syria that was actually destroyed because of the war. So they took seeds out of the seed bank in Norway and then grew them out. And then they've just this year were able to put seeds back into the World Seed Bank from these seeds that they had to replenish the supply in Syria.
It was the first ever withdrawal.
Absolutely, the first ever.
First ever withdrawal.
Interesting. I didn't even know. I wasn't even aware of that. Who can save seed in the seed bank? Can anybody or companies or how's that determined?
I know that there is a pepper that was grown in, I believe, Idaho in this family, and no one else had it. They figured... they gave the seed then to Seed Savers Exchange, who recently, because of its rarity, did send it to Norway to the seed bank.
Wow.
Well, and the Seed Savers Exchange have a vault as well.
Yes, they do.
And anybody can send their seeds to the Seed Savers Exchange and have them stored in the seed bank there.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there was a local seed bank that... maybe even just in the Midwest somewhere where we wouldn't have to go to Norway. Do we save them here?
USDA.
USDA?
Yeah, the USDA has one. I was lucky enough in 2015 to pull some tomatoes and peppers out of it. They used to let the backyard gardener do that,
uh-huh.
but now you have to be a professional or a doctor to make withdrawals. But yeah, you, it is right here. It's good called deal. Grin.
Grin. We'll try to get that info posted too. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And we have Nathan on the line who's got a question about saving his Japanese maple tree. Tony, we'll Ooh. Get to him real quick before we sure. come back to our guest. Hey, Nathan, thanks for hanging on. Sorry for the wait.
No problem. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's wrong with your Jap maple?
Well, it's not that there's anything wrong with it. To give you an idea of what it is, I did a paver patio for a guy in Steeplechase in Richwood. And the tree was going to be moved.
Okay.
And he decided that it wasn't that big of a deal and took a hatchet to it and dug it out of the ground.
Oh, wow.
If you take the hatchet to it, why dig it out?
Well, he couldn't get it out. He was trying to dig it himself.
Right.
He couldn't get
it. Just chop the roots.
Lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So there's very little.
So he had it thrown out in his yard. And I decided to take it home to mine, knowing what the tree is. It's a dwarf as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a crimson lace leaf.
Okay, lace
leaf. Been in his yard for 15 years.
Does all this just take place recently?
No, sir. 2 years ago.
Oh, 2 years ago. Okay. So and where are we today with it?
I planted it at my house thinking, what do I got to lose?
Sure.
Well, it survived.
Well, that's great news.
It's growing great. But I don't like where I put it because I wasn't sure if it was going to come back.
Okay.
I didn't want a dead tree in front of my
right.
house.
And it's already pushing right now. It's fleshing out, correct?
It's just now starting. The leaves are starting to come out.
Yeah. I did cover
it last night.
Well, probably unnecessary. It just depends on how far along the growth is. But I will say this, that the lace leaves, the dissectums, are a little more temperamental, you know, especially having the hard freeze that we had last night. So a lot of times, you know, depending upon how far they've pushed, that could be a little bit of a setback. But at this point in time with maples, you know, maples are running. You know, everything's moving upward into the tree and starting to get reestablished. Unless you really get that root ball, all of it, you know, and you want to relocate it, that's one thing, but I wouldn't disturb it right now.
No, I don't want to do it now. It's where it's at for another season. I was just curious, when do I want to do this in the wintertime?
Fall. After it starts to lose its foliage.
Okay.
And have the new site prepared so you make that transition easier and quicker.
Right.
And get as much of that root ball as you can. You know, and also, you know, keep in mind, too, go out away from the tree. A lot of times, Japanese maples, they're shallow rooted. So, you know, get out as far as the drip line is and then go ahead and make that move and have the site prepare, you know, the new location and do it after it drops its foliage.
Now, when I have the other site prepared, should I line it with some of the similar soil where the Japanese will be coming from?
Well, not necessarily. It's always a benefit to take your existing soil, and you want to use your existing soil, not discard it, and always, you know, just amend it with compost, manure, little peat moss, things like that. You know, clay is not bad. I mean, if we lived in Florida, I say this all the time, if you had all sand, you'd wish you had some clay. But we just need to make the clay here in our area better. You know, clay holds moisture, clay holds nutrients, so just amend it with compost and you should be fine. And I would also use one of two things, a root stimulator product, I like the one at Fertilum, or use Espoma's Biotone. That's going to really help root development after you make that move. And stay away from high nitrogen fertilizers and do not use what's in the green box. That's all I want to say.
Yeah.
And you'll be successful with it. You saw how resilient it was after you had taken it home a couple years ago. I think you'll be fine.
With being in landscape industry, to see that thing survive was an excitement to
me. Yeah, most definitely.
When I took a picture of it and showed it to the gentleman I did the work for, he says, well, I thought it was garbage.
Not Japanese maples. I think they're prized specimens, and I have a great fondness for the Japanese maples. You know, when you make the move, let us know how it goes.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
You too.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Vicki Tuis with us. We have Ben Cohen and Karen Golden. And we need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we want to revisit what they've got going on today with the seed swap. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And this has just been, if you'll pardon the play on words, a great way to seed our memory about how important it is to grow our own food and how to store the seeds.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to get together as a community. I know last year when I went to it, there were so many different varieties of seed, and the different types of seed that I saw, it's beautiful looking. Like the seed that I brought in this morning that I still have from last year, it's just beautiful to look at. The colors, it's very, very unique.
Yeah, you know, beans and corn are two of my favorite seeds to collect just because of the diversity you can see right in the seed coat. They're like poor man's jewels.
Yeah. It's really interesting. You know, let's talk about something that I think is very important, and a lot of people really don't truly understand, and I don't like to beat this down all the time. You know, GMO seed, you know, what's happening with, you know, things that are genetically modified, and why do we want to stay away from that? And I don't want to go pointing fingers at anybody, but you guys are like,
well, you just did.
Who was it?
Well, but we got.
I don't think the show is long enough.
Yeah, really
okay.
On that.
Okay.
I will say though that you know, because I come across this question a lot with the seed library programs in Michigan, and people are very concerned about that. On a small scale gardening scenario, mm-hmm. the likelihood of coming across genetically modified seed is very slim.
Mm-hmm,
genetically modified foods are not as prevalent as the internet would lead us to believe.
I agree with you, and I'm glad you're bringing that up.
Yeah, you know, and that's important because people, they live in fear of it. You know, they're mm-hmm. so concerned about saving seeds or getting involved in the program because of the fear of GMO, and it's not as big a concern as it needs to be, especially when you're dealing with things like tomatoes and beans and things
exactly.
like that. You know, there is not a genetically modified green bean. It just doesn't exist. You know, it's not going to happen. You're not going to bring that to the seed swap.
Right. Now, corn would be one thing.
You can't get a hold of it anyway.
If you're signing contracts when you're buying your corn seed, then you should be concerned.
Yeah.
You know, but on a small scale scenario like we're working with, you are not going to come across a GMO.
And that's good. And I think there's such a fear in that whole way of thinking. And you just hit the nail on the head. I don't think it's really a big concern. But a lot of people, you know, they've heard that term. They've heard those things. And they'll come in, and is that non-GMO? And now growers are just putting that on a tag so they know that it's non-GMO.
It's the same as the gluten-free stickers on everything at the grocery store.
That's right.
You know, it's just good marketing.
I think the only issue with the GMO is that it does cross-pollinate, let's say corn, especially like in Mexico where they have such a diversity of types of corn.
Mm-hmm.
The GMO does cross-pollinate. Corn does. And that could become an issue where your old varieties are then...
Actually, more appropriately, it's not cross-pollinate, it's contaminate.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Correct. Through pollination, because corn is airborne.
Mm-hmm. Corn is wind-pollinated, and the pollen can travel easily a mile, and there's been documented cases of it traveling 5 miles away.
Wow.
And up by me in Michigan, you can't go 5 miles without hitting a cornfield. You know, so on large-scale farmers that are growing these crops, you know, as a small corn grower, I have to be cautious and aware of that and plan my growing accordingly to keep that from happening.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I was visiting with some friends. This is a few years ago. We were up in Newark, Ohio. And, you know, we were driving a lot, you know, by a lot of cornfields, and there would be these signs, you know, they were like test plots. Is that GMO? Where you see that? And
hybrid.
It's a hybrid. Okay.
I was just curious.
I don't know. But I did notice that, and I thought it was very interesting. And it wasn't anything at the time, I'm going back a few years, that I was accustomed to seeing.
Right. Yeah. And those are like brand name advertisements, basically,
okay,
is what you're seeing.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony said you guys have to scoot out a little early. So before we let you go, let's go around and get some more contact information, websites, Facebook pages, and the time of the event today.
The event is the Ohio Valley Seed Swap. It begins at 10 o'clock today and runs till 2. It is going to be held at the Boone County Cooperative Extension Office, which is located at 1822 Patrick Drive in Burlington, and it will be held in the lower level of the Enrichment Center.
Okay.
And it's real easy to get to. Just take 75, go south, get off the Florence exit, take 18, and you'll run right into it. Mm-hmm. So, Ernie, you need to go. Take that kilt off. Get out there. Yeah. Get in the garden.
Oh, leave the kilt on.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You create a lot of buzz with that.
If you want to follow it during the year, too, because we will be sharing other events that will be happening, like our tomato festival we have on the farm, it'll be posted on there. And if you go to that Facebook page, it is under the Ohio Valley Seed Swap.
Awesome. And Ben, let's get your contact information.
Yep, I'm Ben Cohen. I'm from Small House Farm up in Central Michigan. It's smallhousefarm.com. I'm actually scheduled to speak at the Seed Swap today, sometime in the afternoon. Karen's also going to be speaking. There's a number of educational programs throughout the day, as well as seed saving, and I encourage everybody to come. Whether you're a seed saver or a gardener or not, this is an event for everybody.
And you can stay for part of it or all of it. It's your choice.
Nice. And Karen?
Karen Golden, Michigan at ARLooms.com.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming in. Been fantastic.
And, pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You come back when you come back in town. And maybe we will hear from you a lot about the farmers markets this year.
I'm not doing them this year.
Well, maybe you can hook us up with somebody who does so we can sneak off and get all that great stuff.
That was a really nice little segment.
I go over there every Saturday morning for delivery, so I can always kind of just peek around and tell you what's hot.
Yeah, okay. You are Market Rover.
You have an open invitation to call us anytime you've got anything to share.
The Finley Market Rover. All right, a pleasure. Nice meeting you, Ben. Karen, you as well. Vicky, always thank you. It's always good to see you guys.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we got everybody out the door and on their way to the seed swap. Going to be a great day out there.
Yeah, last year, my dad and I went to it when they had it over here on the side of the river, and it was great. It was really the coolest thing one of the coolest things I've seen. Because I saw all types of seed, like different varieties of corn. I was like, that really looks cool. That looks really gnarly. That's a cool color.
Gnarly.
Yeah. So it's like the seeds I brought in today in these little glass jars.
Uh-huh.
Really neat. I didn't even sow them last year. And come to find out, they'll keep for years. Depending upon how you store them.
And the jars are nice, too. They
They were more inquisitive about the jar, the glass jar, than they were the seed, of all things.
But we've got their pictures posted up on our Facebook page in and around the house, and we also have the information about the seed swap and how to get there, what times, and make sure you
It's a great day to do it, too. There's so many things that we can do this weekend with the weather being the way that it is, the sunshine that's in the forecast.
Yep.
Lots and lots and lots of things to do. Get out into the yard. Get down to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up your Fertiloom three-step program. Pick up whatever you need to start making things happen in and around the landscape, the yard, the garden. I know that a lot of people have been coming in. They've been buying soils. They've been cleaning out their old pots, their window boxes, their porch patio pots, all that stuff. And just get ready for the season so you can transition right into the season, be ready, and you're not trying to cram it all into one day.
Mm-hmm.
Just work it in pieces. Work it in bits. You know how to eat an elephant, Ernie?
Since one
you
like elephants?
One
bite at a time.
One bite at a time. Don't overwhelm yourself.
Yeah.
So, and we can so easily do that to ourselves. It's just take it all on or in at one given moment. And honestly, I don't know about you, Ernie. I'll mentally wear myself out thinking about everything I have to do. Well, I feel like a hamster on a wheel.
It easy, then you never get started.
Yeah, you never get started.
I'm worn out just thinking about what I need to do.
That comes into play, by the way. So lots of things that we can do, and getting our lawns and yards into shape. Mm-hmm. And something I also want to talk about as well are the winter annual weeds. A lot of people are coming into the garden center, and they're like, hey, what's this purple blooming kind of stuff? And it could be a couple of different things, you know. A lot of the colors, they have a blue hue to them in some of the blooming perennial weeds. The blooming winter annual weeds, they have that similar color. And right now, what's plaguing most of us are the winter annual weeds. And two that come to mind right off the bat, and they're easy to identify, is henbit and purple dead nettle. They almost look similar in the bloom, but if you carefully look at the stem and you look at the leaves that come off of each of the stems, they're totally different. For example, henbit. It has a scalloped-shaped leaf that is directly attached to the stem of the plant itself. And there isn't a petiole on it. And when I say a petiole, that is a little stem that comes off of the main stem and it goes to the leaf itself. Dead nettle has a petiole. Henbit does not. So they look a lot alike. But both of those plants, too, both of those winter annual weeds, they have a square stem. They are related to the mint family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those guys will reseed themselves. Eventually, they will die out as we progress into the summer months and as it gets hotter. And we see the aftermath late in the fall. They start to germinate. So that's why we were talking about the pre-emergence in our landscape beds.
Matter of fact,
not only do you do that in the spring, but also you need to do it late summer going into the fall.
As a matter of fact, we have someone who's got that same issue right now. We have Chris on the line from Latonia, mm-hmm. who's dealing with some weeds coming through the mulch. Hi, Chris. Ooh. What kind of weeds do you think you have?
I'm not exactly sure what I've got. I've got a real small area. Matter of fact, it's just seems like a battle I have every year. I didn't know whether, you know, the old days, I remember putting that black paper down or black plastic down.
But
it just seems like whatever I do with mulch, it just creeps back up real bad. I've got some ornamental grass. And it just seems like it's just a constant problem.
Yeah, it can be. You know, the thing about it, are you, I first want to ask you, are you by chance using any pre-emergent type of products in your landscape beds?
No, sir, I'm not. I've always been kind of scared about using it.
Yeah, understandable. You know, do you have pets by chance or kids?
Not anymore. My dog passed away.
Well, you know, in the landscape beds, you know, now not your vegetable beds, but I would not be opposed to using a pre-emergent product.
Okay.
And when I say that, I'm talking about a couple of products that I'm sure you're familiar with, one being Preen and the other being Dimension.
Okay.
They both work the same. However, you know, I lean towards Dimension because it's a lot easier on a pocketbook, better priced. And in addition to that, it lasts another 30 days longer.
Okay.
An additional 30 days. So you're getting up to 4 months protection. And what it's going to do, you know, a lot of times weed seed will blow into, you know, as windy as it's been. You know, that's just an idea. I'm just giving you the way that weed seed gets about. And I've seen a lot of, I tell you what, just in recent days, a lot of dandelion puffballs already.
Oh, yeah.
And they just ride the wind, and all of a sudden, they just park themselves on top of the mulch in your landscape beds. And you don't notice it right away, but they get a little cozy, and things go just right. And they set up home real quick on you. And then you're out there digging them out, or you're using some sort of herbicide to get rid of them. So really, the pre-emergent products, I think, are by far the best approach to keeping unwanted weeds out of the lawn and out of the landscape beds as well.
Okay, good deal. Do you sell them at your store?
We do. The Dimension product that I'm talking about, it comes in a red and yellow bag. You will only find it at your local, you know, garden centers and nurseries here in the tri-state area, people who are Fertilum dealers. And it's called Turf and Ornamental Weed and Grass Stopper. It's a great product. It really is. And, you know, those who have the Preen dispenser type of applicators, you know, once that thing's empty, just buy Dimension and fill it up. You'll have an applicator. But you will save yourself a lot of headaches by taking that approach.
Okay, I'll do it. I can see your store from my front porch, so I will.
Oh, you're not that far away. All right, Chris.
And Ernie, this is Chris Lyons. I don't know if you remember me.
I do, Chris. I do.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I'll come over and visit you because it seems to be a constant problem for me.
We'll talk about it. That sounds good. Thanks, Chris.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It was great having Vicki, Karen, and Ben in, and appreciate them taking the time out of a busy day because they're getting ready for the seed swap today and spending some time with us full of information.
You know, that's a lot of work to pull that together.
Yes.
And they have to get back out to the Burlington area on a fast track and make it all come together and happen. But if you get an opportunity today, that takes place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And I will say this, I can attest to this. Last year, it was a cool event. I was just totally taken by it. And the way these people come together and they're so willing to share various seeds that they've collected over time.
Mm-hmm.
And what a way to preserve
yep.
our livelihood in a lot of ways, you know.
Agreed.
Keeping seed around, I mean, it's how we're here. It's why we're here.
That's what I was getting ready to say.
It's why we're here.
And you kind of wonder why all the weeds are there.
Well, a lot of times, you know, we're talking about seed. Weed seed really gets into our landscape beds and into our lawns a lot of times late in the season. So these winter annual weeds that we're just touching base on, bittercress is another one, you know, it gets a little nice white pretty bloom on it. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's prevalent. It's everywhere. And once those guys mature, the seed disperses, the plant will eventually die off as we progress into the summer months. But this is my spin on it. If it's in the lawn, if it's somewhere in the landscape beds, I'm going to spray it before it gets itself established and can set seed and drop seed. Although you can take a pre-emergent approach with it, I don't even want it in there. I don't even want to give it an opportunity to seed.
No.
So, you know, I really like weed-free zone, especially this time of year, because it's still very effective in cooler temperatures, where a lot of our herbicides aren't until you get to a certain temperature, 65 and above. But weed-free zone is very, very effective. It's very effective on our perennial weeds are a little tougher to get rid of, and you're starting to see wild violets, wild onions.
Yeah.
Won't be long till you'll see creeping Charlie if it's not already starting to start blooming. That's one of those pesky perennial weeds that's been plaguing you. You have a nice bed of it, by the way.
It's not as big as it once was. Oh, I'm working on a round gate again.
I doubt if you are, but maybe the missus.
No.
I don't like it personally. No, I still like it.
No. That's my realm out there.
Okay. You're outside, she's inside?
No, that the lawn stuff. I get to tackle all of that. She's into the beautification part.
Got it. And, you know, and talking about using weed-free zone, I want to really emphasize this as well. It's a great product. And, guys, it's like this. More's not better. A lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of research has been put into these products to give us the best ratio mixtures. And with weed-free zone in a concentrated form, I like to use it in that format. But it also, it's available in a hose end attachment and also an RTU, meaning a ready to use, like a little trigger spray type of applicator. And so it's your choice. You can buy it in three different ways. I like to mix it up into a tank sprayer. And if you don't have a tank sprayer, I can't say this enough. You should invest in at least one, if not two. Always keep those tank sprayers clean after usage each time. Label those tank sprayers as to herbicide, you know, fungicide or what have you, so you know what you're using in it. And I say this because sometimes when you use any type of the products like Kills All or Roundup that contains glyphosate, there could be some residual element to it. So sometimes that could still be lingering in that tank if you don't wash it out thoroughly.
Oh, that's a good
point.
And
you spray something, you might injure it. So, it's always added value to have a couple of tank sprayers and keep them clean. If you keep them clean, they will be good to you for a number of years. Believe me, they will. I've had some for, 10, 12, 15 years. So it's a valuable tool to have. I like mixing things up from a concentrated standpoint. It gives me a lot of flexibility. I can mix up a half a gallon or I can mix up a gallon and go out and only spray the affected areas. You don't need to spray the entire lawn. You're wasting the product. And sometimes, let's say we're going after clover. Clover can be a little more difficult to get rid of, but if you're leaning in the direction of weed-free zone, it has more 2,4-D in it, dicamba, carfentrazone, and it's very, very effective in getting rid of the tougher-to-kill perennial weeds. Now, sometimes
I want you to keep this in mind. Make sure that there is not a rain in the forecast for 24 hours. And a lot of my peers, they're going to be saying, oh, why is he saying that? Because it's rain fast in a couple of hours. Yes, it is. Typically, if you read a little deeper into the instructions in the label, it will say you may need to reapply if it rains.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you take that all out of play. The other thing about weed-free zone that I like a lot is still when the temperatures are relatively on the cooler, milder side, I say up to about 75 degrees, if you add a little bit of Dawn dishwashing detergent to it, like mix it up into a gallon, 2.5 fluid ounces to a gallon of water, take a teaspoon of Dawn dishwashing detergent and just gently put it into the mixture and agitate it, or buy a spreader sticker. It acts as a surfactant, and it makes that product adhere to whatever it is that you're spraying a lot better, and therefore, it's facilitating the product getting into the plant quicker.
Now, there, if I remember correctly, isn't there some temperature restrictions on the spreader sticker?
No, not on a spreader sticker, no.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge, okay? Uh-huh. But using the weed-free zone, you know, Dave Taylor, our rep, says you can use it in the 40s. And probably there's a lot of truth to that, as long as things are actively growing, but I like to use it in the 50s. I know, you know, it's, you know, I'm not guessing. And I also like to use it when there isn't any rain in the forecast. I'm not guessing.
Right.
And, sometimes if it doesn't get rid of what you want to get rid of right away, don't wave the white towel. You need to come back in another 10 to 14 days and maybe reapply. But you have to stay with what you're trying to get rid of.
Okay.
And it works. I know that it works. I use it. Weed-free zone, and you will only find it at your locally owned and independent operating garden centers and nurseries here in the tri-state area that are Fertilume dealers. Great product.
749-B105. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back,
we're going to talk about the plant of the week. And you talk about seasonal interest all year long. This one's for you, and it's a shrub, a little hint. And we'll tell you more about it when we come back. Give us a call at 749-B105. I'm Tony with Ernie. You're in and around the house, local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back.
Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, in and around the house, is ready with your plant of the week.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And each week we try to feature something new or something that might be of interest to you. And Tony's got a good one today.
This one has seasonal interest, no doubt about it. And truly, it's the epitome of the ideal shrub, which provides unbeatable, like I said, year-round interest. No doubt about it.
Yep.
And that is the oak leaf hydrangea. Love this plant, love this plant, love this plant. You know, it's white flowers. I mean, they just show up from afar, from a distance. But that's not always necessarily the main attention getter about this particular shrub. We all love the white flowers that we see and that we get from the oak leaf hydrangea. But there's so many other things about this shrub that's awesome. And one of those is it's bold, textured like foliage.
Uh-huh.
Very distinct. You know, it's got that oak leaf look. Hence the name, oak leaf hydrangea. And the structure itself is just very noticeable. And the foliage, too, when it turns, it's beautiful, just deep reddish-purple color in the fall. That's my favorite attribute of this particular shrub because I like the fall season. So in addition to that, when you get out of the fall, you have another interesting element about the oak leaf hydrangea, and that is its exfoliating bark. As it ages, it kind of just peels and takes on a very interesting texture and look. So you're getting all of these things in one shrub. What more can you ask for?
I don't know.
You know, there's a lot of things that Lisa wants in a one man, and you, does she get them all? But let me tell you something. With this shrub, you get it all. You get the beautiful white blooms. You get the texture of the foliage. It's just bold looking. It's stately looking. And, you know, you get that beautiful fall color. You get that winter interest in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's encompassed into this one shrub. I love this shrub.
So get to your local independent.
You're going to find the best selection for oak leaf hydrangeas at your local garden centers and nurseries. There's no doubt about it. We carry different varieties of the oak leaf. You know, there are various sizes and heights that the oak leaf can get to. And, for example, if you're looking for something that's been around a while that gives you a little bit of height, maybe in the 8-foot range, give or take, a little more. And I used to have this one down in my yard, and I had it for a number of years. I still have one, but the other one, the deer happened to gravitate towards it one year, and I was so upset that I didn't keep up with the deer protection. But Alice is a beautiful oak leaf hydrangea, and one well worth having. Also, another one, my favorite, it's been around for a while, is Snow Queen. We have one at the garden center that's been there for a number of years. Snow Queen will probably give you, grow to around a height of 6 feet, give or so, mm-hmm. give or take. Almost the same spread. Ours is loaded with blooms now in the summer months. I mean, you can't count them all. There's that many blooms on it. And it's stellar. It's stellar. It's a great performer. True, tried, and tested. Has been around a lot. And I can't say enough about Snow Queen. Also, too, another new one, that's not newer, it's been around a little bit, is Gatsby's Gal. Just, I don't know about the panicles or the blooms of this particular oak leaf hydrangea, but, Ernie, they're stunning. Just it's just almost like a pure white.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't beat it. Another one that's been popular in recent years, it's a relatively newer introduction, is Ruby Slippers. Ruby Slippers is a dwarf variety, probably going to reach a height of 3 to 4 foot. Gets a little bit more of a spread, maybe 4 up to 6. It's white flowers as it opens up, and it just gradually turns to a rosy reddish hue as we progress throughout the season. And you know what else is interesting, too, about the oak leaf hydrangea? Is that once its blooms kind of start to fade off, they're great to cut, bring inside, you know, put a cluster of them in a vase, and you know, you can do a little bit of interior decorating. Karen Sackstetter would like that.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So there's so many things about the oak leaf hydrangea that's just it's a prized specimen to have in the landscape. If you're able to accommodate an oak leaf hydrangea, do so. You will not be disappointed. I'm telling you right now. It's one well worth having. Now, let's talk about culture. You know, what's necessary for the oak leaf hydrangea to perform at its best? Got any hints? Got any tips? What do you think? Nothing? just remain silent. You're good. But anyway, place it in an area that gets full sun to part shade.
That was going to be my first
preferably,
suggestion.
Preferably, really. And I've noticed this before because, especially with Snow Queen,
yeah.
I've had it down in an area that was more shade than sun, still bloomed well, but not like it does getting more sun that I have it in at the garden center.
Okay.
The more sun, the more bloom production. And in addition to the sun having a favorable impact on bloom production, it also has a favorable impact on its foliage color in the fall. So the sun comes into play in a number of ways right there. So very, very important to say the least. Make sure you provide really decent moisture. Once it's established, it can tolerate a little bit of dryness or drought. I mean, you know, we all get thirsty. So keep that in mind. If we're going through a period of time without any moisture, be sure to give it some moisture. I mean, you know, hydra, water. Okay, you get it?
Sure.
You got it, Ernie?
I do. Stay refreshed.
Stay refreshed. Now, this is what's really important, too, about the oak leaf hydrangea. Avoid, refrain from, however you want to term it as being, pruning in the fall or anytime in the winter or early spring because you're going to cut out the bloom buds for this upcoming season.
Hmm.
Okay? You're going to remove it. If you need to prune it, and I've never pruned my Snow Queen, and it's been there for 8 to 10 years. It's not really necessary. And that's why it's really important to plant the right plant in the right location, given to what it can grow to or its potential height and width. But if you need to prune it right after it's finished blooming, okay? Because it sets up its fall, it sets up its buds in the fall season, mm-hmm. late summer, fall for next year.
So as soon as they're finished,
then if you want to prune it or you need to, you can do so at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, this is a plant that deserves so much attention, especially if you don't have one. Look around your landscape. Look around your yard. Do you have a place for one? Because I'm sure we'll find one that will fit. How's that?
I like it.
You like it? I like it. It's a great plant. One of my favorites. The oak leaf hydrangea.
Perfect. Got more?
That's the plan of the week.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've talked a lot about seeds, a lot about the plant of the week and the Fertilin three-step program, but it's also that point, especially with all the moisture in the ground, grub control.
You know, right, every day, every week almost, you know, people are asking me more now today than ever about grub control. Mm-hmm. And it used to be you wouldn't even hear grubs hardly talked about. But I think in recent years, people have been experiencing more and more issues with grub issues in the lawn. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, by the time that they realize they have some grub problems and lawn problems, it's late in the season. It's September. And at that point in time, that's when homeowners come in and it's like, hey, I'm able to just peel back my yard, or if I rake it, it just comes out so easily.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is a result of grubs feeding on the root system of our turf. And in recent years, for whatever reason, it's been more prevalent than ever before. And unfortunately, that's just how it's been. And I think a lot of it kind of the catalyst for the change suddenly in the last couple of years was a few years ago in the month of June, we had a lot of moisture, and that just allowed the female, she was able to work her way into the soil and lay a lot of eggs mm-hmm. rather easily.
Yeah.
And I think we're still experiencing some of the fallout, no pun intended. And if you really want to control grubs from a preventative way, preventative measure, is you need to come into the game with perfect timing. And when I say that, I'm talking about like the end of April, the month of May, you want to put down grub-free zone 3 from High Yield. You want to put that product down, and during that course of time, we get rain or you water, starts working its way into the soil surface and gets into the turf's root system. And by the time we get into June and you have any grub or you have any Japanese beetle activity or the mask chafer activity, those are grubs. You know, there's various types of grubs. It protects the lawn, the turf, and as they hatch and start to feed, they will die. They will not make it. It's very effective. I mean, I have a friend, Jim Weedholter. He will tell you that it made a huge difference in his lawn last year. By the time you find out that you've had grub damage in the lawn, you need to take a reactive approach. And typically at that point in time, it's like, whoa, we're in the ninth inning with two outs and nobody on base. But you need to use a product that has Dilox, which gets into the surface of the soil real quick after watering it in, that has a quick effectiveness to it. But take the proactive approach. Use Grub-Free Zone 3. It's a high-yield product. You'll find it at your local garden centers and nurseries. Now, I've heard a lot of people talk about Milky Spore, but it's a natural way of getting rid of grubs. It takes a period of years for that to really take place and take hold in the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also heard that there's research that says it's really not that effective. But and then you got a lot of grub activity. You'll see a lot of mole activity.
Oh, not the mole.
So they kind of go hand in hand in a lot of ways. And just because you see a lot of mole activity, I don't want to sound the alarm and say, hey, you got grubs. You know, moles also like earthworms, too. So mm-hmm. they're insectivores. But that might be a great indicator that you have really nice soil and it's enriched with a lot of healthy organisms and a lot of earthworms. So going back to the grub control, late April, the month of May, get it down. That's where it is. That's where it's happening. Right. Yes.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Don't forget about the seed swap. We spent some time with Vicky and Ben and Karen, and we have all that information posted on our Facebook page. It's happening today, and it's one of those things where you're going to walk away with much more information than you really thought you would.
It's a great event, and it sounds like they're going to have one heck of a turnout. Real easy to get to. Just, 75 South, get off at the Florence exit. When you get off the exit, you're going to turn right on the Burlington Pike, also Route 18. And inevitably, you're going to run into the Boone County Extension. And I'd like to go. I hope I can get an opportunity to just sneak out and stop there for a few moments. But I have a lot of stuff to take outside that we brought inside this past week because of all the cold weather we've been having.
7.9 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to revisit some things we talked about earlier in the show, the cold crops and fertile and pre-step programs. Don't forget about those. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And the weather's going to be beautiful for the weekend. Your first instinct is to run out and plant something. Don't hurry. Don't make any mistakes. And make sure that you put the right plants out at the right time, because we're bound to have another little cold snap, so to speak. But there are some things you can get in the ground.
Oh, definitely. Especially, we're talking about vegetables and so forth, your cold crops, which is really a term that's used to describe different types of vegetables in the mustard family, like including broccoli and so forth, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, collards, kale, all that good stuff, Ernie. And now's the time to do it. Those are the types of crops that are going to do well in the temperatures and the cooler situations that we've been experiencing here as of late. And refrain from trying to get those tomato plants out, and especially in the ground. That's just, it's a shock to those guys. And they just sit there. And a lot of times, if you start noticing that the foliage takes on a purplish hue, it's because of the soil temperatures, and it's locking up some of the phosphorus intake and all that other good stuff. Nutrients get whacked out, and it just alters the whole performance of the tomato plant. I know everyone's gunning to get the first tomato. Nothing wrong with that. But keep in mind, I'm just telling you the truth. It's a known fact. But we can certainly plant onion sets, onions, potatoes, all that good stuff, lettuce, spinach. So get that out there. We have plenty of time to harvest that and enjoy those food crops, and nothing better. And by the time things are done there, it's time to go into the summer months and plant tomatoes and peppers.
Now, you mentioned onions. Unfortunately, Tony, we have somebody who is dealing with something that she's not really wanting, and that's Ann and Ross, who's dealing with some wild onions.
They're tough. They're tough. Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Doing all right. So, you got a lot of them in your yard?
In a flower bed that I put in. They're just coming up everywhere. And I didn't know if it was best to spray them with something, but I didn't want to get it on my, perennials that are around it. Or do I have to dig everyone up?
You can dig those up. You'll notice, too, when you lift those, you might find that there's several bulblets, underground.
Right.
You want to remove as many of those as possible. I've had great success using weed-free zone on wild onions, but a couple of things need to happen first when you spray wild onions. Keep in mind that the blade itself on the wild onion, or onions in general, is kind of waxy in a way. It kind of repels what we spray on it.
Okay.
And therefore, because of that, it makes it tough for some of the products that we use when we spray wild onions to penetrate it. So what I've done in the past personally, and I did this because people would always tell me that they didn't have success with weed-free zone spraying wild onions. And I'm like, well, I'm here to say I think differently. But what I did, you need to bruise them. And the way that I bruise them, a lot of times people will bend them or step on them to open up the structure, the cell part of it on the outside, where when you spray it, that product gets into it better. But I've also taken a little block of wood and a mallet, Now, of course, I'm not telling somebody to take that approach and do a half an acre of a yard. It's ludicrous. I'm not saying to do that at all. But in your situation where you just have some spot wild onions in the landscape bed, take a little piece of wood and a hammer and just tap it against the wood, bruise them, and then I want you to spray them with weed-free zone. And use a spreader sticker in the weed-free zone because it's going to keep that product on that waxy blade a lot better.
Okay.
And you will be effective. I'm telling you, I've seen it work. I've done it.
Okay. Yeah, I've tried, you know, pulling them out, and then it seems like more come. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That happens, too, because underground, you know, you have those little boblets, you know, that are under there, and they're just kind of, you know, they spread out.
Okay.
But try that. Tell me what you think, or dig deep enough and manually, physically remove them.
What if you, like cut the green part off with a scissors or something and then spray it? Will that work, or do you just have to...
You would think that. It's a great question, and I should have mentioned that, and I apologize that I did not. The more surface that you have, more blade surface, the more surface that gets covered with the product that gets down into it quicker.
Okay.
That's why it's best to bruise them and spray them. And you know what? Sometimes if you got to spray them a second time in another 10 to 14 days, which you shouldn't, do it again. You will come out the winner.
Okay.
And let us know. Follow up with me. What garden center is close to you?
She's in Ross.
Yeah, I'm in Ross. There's mostly up in Coleraine area.
Okay, stop at White Oak Garden Center, Schwab, Nursery. They sell weed-free zone. And buy a spreader sticker, a surfactant, or use a teaspoon of dishwashing detergent and gently agitate it into the mixture after you mix it first.
Okay.
You put it all together at once, it's going to foam up.
Okay. I have drift roses and tulips and all that all around in that area. Is that going to kill those if it gets on them?
It could injure those other desirable plants that you're talking about if there's overspray. In that particular case, you have another method.
Make sure it's not windy.
Yeah, make sure it's not windy. But you also have another method you can apply the product. Invest in a good pair of heavy, rubber gloves, you know, that's, I don't even know, for lack of a better term, that's, you know, certified to be used with chemicals. Okay. And pour your product, mix it accordingly in a bucket, and take a sponge and wipe it on there.
Okay.
Okay, so therefore you're not risking getting any overspray on the other plants.
Okay, great.
And, you know, follow up with me. Tell me what you think. You know, say, hey, Tony, it didn't work for me, but Fertilum guarantees it. You know, it's a win-win-win situation for you all the way around.
Good, good. All right, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Your
Have a good weekend.
Thanks. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were talking earlier about some things to prevent weeds in your landscape, but talking about your lawn, you should have already gotten the first step down.
Well, we still have plenty of time.
Yeah.
Today's only the 8th of April.
Mm-hmm.
But as we start moving forward and as temperatures start to rise, the ground temperatures start to move upward, and the closer we get to the, you know, those low 60-degree soil temps and so forth, that's when crabgrass starts to take effect or starts to germinate.
I noticed that when there was a little break last week, so I hurried out and got the front yard cut. Too wet in the backyard to cut, so I put that off. Now I've got a little bit of a jungle back there, but around the perimeter, those dandelions have already popped up.
See, that's interesting. You say around the perimeter.
Yeah, around by close to
along the fence line.
Along the fence line, close to the driveway, and, of course, around the back area where we have a little burn pit and some leftover firewood there. You'll find them dotted along those areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I told you an easy way. If it's just a few, dandelions here and there, do this and approach it like this. Pull the blooms if you just have a few,
right,
so the bees aren't going to it, and spray it with weed-free zone.
Okay.
Or take a pocket knife or some sort of a tool and just dig them out.
Sure. And then, of course, there is also a little bit of a smattering of wild violets.
A smattering?
A smattering.
So what is that, several? 30?
A few than
45?
More. A few more than a couple.
A sellout, standing room only crowd. You know, again, wild violets, weed-free zone. I like weed-free zone. I find it so effective. And again, more is not better. 2.5 fluid ounces
sure.
to a gallon of water. I go for the concentrated approach, using just the concentrates. your concentrates will last for a long time, you know, inside the home, as long as they're not out in the shed and they freeze, 3 to 5 years. So, you know, it's an investment that takes you over a few years,
mm-hmm.
which lessens the cost of the product, if you want to look at it like that. But, you know, and it's like when we talk about the 3-step program, you know, those of us that have been recently getting together in the industry that are Fertilume dealers, we're calling it the 3-step plus. So at times when something creeps into our lawn, that plus element is weed-free zone. So that's where we're trying to take it to, because sometimes that happens. So how do you get rid of that? Weed-free zone. So it's the 3-step program, 3-step plus. You know, you got the red bag, all seasons, 2, which is your pre-emergent. Then you're using the lawn food plus iron twice in the fall. And if you're using the winterizer in the fall, that's okay as well. But it's the Fertilume 3-step plus.
Fertilume 3-step plus.
3-step plus. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, and we'll explain it to you. It's real simple.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some weeding, some winter seeds that have sort of given us some issues.
Well, we've been talking about that. You want to continue that conversation?
We do, because I got a couple of other questions.
You got a couple questions for me. There you go.
And when we come back, Tony's going to answer them for me. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Just want to recap on a couple of things we were talking about this morning. First, get out to the seed swap. Going to be a great time out there. Go see Ben, Vicky, and Karen. And Tony, what we were talking about, some of the weeds and stuff. What are we seeing the most of?
The most of. Most people are coming into the garden center. It's like, hey, what is this purplish, bluish stuff that's blooming? I see it all over. And more than likely, it's one of two. It's either henbit or it's purple dead nettle. They are winter annual weeds, and eventually they will die out. But the seed that they leave behind will typically germinate in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we call them winter annual weeds.
Gotcha.
So you can do one of two things or two of two things. I like to spray them now before they start getting into that. They come into their own and are able to drop seed.
Right.
And therefore, I'm not worried about it. And late in the season, make sure you put down a pre-emergent product. You know, do that twice throughout the growing season. And, you know, the spring and then later in the summer going into fall. And usually you keep those guys out of the landscape beds. Also, you're seeing a lot of bittercrest. A lot of times, you know, there's even ranunculus, you know, starting to pop its head up, the yellow blooming stuff. So there's a lot of things that we need to do and take care of and get rid of to establish that nice, healthy turf that we're trying so hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
And once you establish that turf, you know, it's going to keep a lot of the weeds out for you. That's the key right there. And then the rest of it's up to you just to help it along.
Good deal.
And you'll have a beautiful lawn. Get out to your local home and garden centers today and nurseries. Pick up your Fertilume 3-step program if you haven't already. And if you need a spreader, we're there to loan you one.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Get out and enjoy this beautiful weather, and we'll talk to you next week.